Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey, good afternoon. You heard it here. It is Steve Jones Show, but I am not Steve Jones. I am Chris Elio filling in for the great Sean Carey. We're waiting on Steve Jones to come in to make his way into the Sunbury Motors studio, as he so often does. He's a very busy guy, that's Steve Jones. Sunbury Motors, today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Route 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Well, I'm here to deliver bad news.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
I'm here to deliver bad news. All these years of being a part of the Sunbury Motors, Sunbury Broadcasting family, they've always managed to put the holiday party on a day where they knew I couldn't go. This year I'm going.
Yeah. Now it's a party.
Yeah. Now, we did tell the suit a different date. But that was only so we could have a good time.
Oh, that's all right. That's right.
And we are going to party our brains out.
Sure are. That's a true story.
Sean's here.
Yeah.
Awesome to be here.
In the Sunbury Motors studio. Did we take good care of it?
Pristine.
Yeah. Man.
Absolutely.
Oh, you got iced tea.
I got a lovely beverage.
Yeah, what do you want?
I got nothing.
You get one too.
Nothing.
But the love and affection 24/7, 365 counts for something.
I'm getting you a wood stove. I can't even get a drink.
They've already started partying over there, apparently.
Oh, no. We are rolling here today, man. We are rolling in here today.
The party has begun.
Now, today we have Merrill Reese today. Right? We have Merrill Reese today.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles are soaring, and Merrill's never sounded better. We'll have Zach Showers today. We'll talk to Zach about the Sealands Grove matchup with Bellefonte, which is being played in Illinois.
Where?
Illinois.
Okay. The boys were texting each other about an hour ago, figuring out a game plan when they should leave, so we'll have to take that into account, if it's Illinois.
I can imagine.
Because they're trying to figure out breakfast plans, you know, Prime Buffet, Duncansville, you know, kind of deal.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
They're figuring that out before they get to Mansion Park.
Knowing those guys really well, I'm sure they've got a Bob Evans there. How about Bucknell last night?
Oh, what a great game.
They gave them all they could handle.
I think for the casual fan, because, oh, come on, they're 0-3. Well, I mean, give them a little bit of credit. What a gutsy performance last night. I felt bad for Zach Thomas. There were a couple times where he had some great outside shots. They just didn't go in. Could have been a chance for them to go up one or two halfway through the second half.
Great performance. I mean, Dick and I were sitting there, and, you know, we have to do scoreboard updates or whatever. Like, Dick, it's 2-point game. Dick's 3-point game. He goes, how deep? Oh, I said, like 10 minutes ago. I go, what the heck? So, look, it's a one-bid league. So never forget that it's a one-bid league. I know Bucknell fans are reminded of this often, but you do all of this to make sure that you are battle-ready and battle-tested by the time you get to your league. And they will be. There might be spots open on the floor in January that haven't been open for months.
Early on in the game, Nana Fallon had this really cool spin move on the baseline for a dunk, but then you had North Carolina go down the floor for two quick possessions, so Nathan had to call quick time to stop the bleeding. At that point, you're thinking, oh boy, I wonder if the wheels are going to come off the bus that point in the game. But they hung in there till halftime, got off to a great start in the second half, and they really kept it. They kept it interesting. They kept it snug down there, which was
great.
Yes,
they did. So Merrill Reese today. Tomorrow, Brad Edwards from ESPN is going to join us. We are going to break down the college football playoff based on what the committee has done. And again, it is open to interpretation as to what the committee has done so far. I've watched these people 4 years now. I don't get it. I don't get what they're looking at. How do you sit there? I mean, the part that's bizarre are the explanations as to why they do things. Let's take this bizarre explanation. Iowa State, and okay, Oklahoma lost to Iowa State. So that's considered to be a loss that keeps them out. You know, they're at four. Instead of being higher, they're at four because they lost to Iowa State. So, okay, so now what you're – but Clemson lost at Syracuse, but it wasn't – but they didn't have their quarterback the entire game. Okay, so let me get this straight now. It's a really – it's not a damaging loss to lose to a six-loss Syracuse team because you didn't have your starting quarterback the entire game. Oh, but wait a minute. You're built on defense. And you gave up 30-plus that night. Okay. But you're not talking to idiots here. Okay? This is not like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. All right? And Oklahoma lost to Iowa State. That's 1-6 games. See, in the bowl season, you'll see Iowa State play. Syracuse will be watching Iowa State play. This is the same Iowa State team that lost to Iowa in overtime. It's the same Syracuse team that loses a lot.
I don't know if he's been the head of the committee all 4 years, but I know he was last year and this year. I think he's the AD of Texas Tech, I believe. He usually pops on and talks with Reese Davis on the show after they announced the list.
Well, if that's the case, he has no clue what good defensive football looks like.
I just get the impression his name is Kirby, but I can't think of the last name right off the top of my head. But he just seems rather
Kirby Holcutt, I think.
I believe so. Yeah. He just seems kind of timid. I mean, it's not like Reese Davis is reeling off questions and you know going 60 minutes inquisition kind of on him, but
like they're partners, for goodness sakes. Yeah. It's a partnership between the two. Well, ESPN turns the thing into a show.
Yeah.
But you sit there and you listen to the explanations. You're like, I mean, I give them the benefit of the doubt all the time, where I talk about weekly snapshots and body of work and blah 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 blah. But there's certain things that don't make any sense.
Okay, but can I interject with a moment here? So upon further review, I know Syracuse loses a lot, but you need to take into consideration their losses. First off, they've beaten Clemson, who is in the top four. So that's
irrelevant.
Something there.
Irrelevant.
Why is it irrelevant, though? That's how college football does things.
Syracuse is not a good football team, all right? Iowa State is a better football team than Syracuse, pure and simple. And guess what? That night, defending national champion Clemson, which has hung its hat on its defense all season long, gave up 35 points. Okay? I'm not saying Clemson should be out of it, but please don't give me the Syracuse is better than their record. They aren't. They're 4-6. They're 4-6.
Yeah, but again, their losses count for something. That's how college football has always done things. And now I agree with you there. If that is the metric in which I don't agree with their metric, but if that's what they've been doing for decades,
are you a Syracuse grad?
No, not even a little bit. But not even a little bit. I've never even been to Syracuse. But they lost to a ranked NC State team by only 8 points. They lost to Miami, who's number two now, by only 8 points. They lost to LSU by 9 points. Like, they've been all in all these games with the exception of Wake Forest, who absolutely annihilated them last weekend. But other than that, they've been in every single game. Florida State's garbage, but they still only lost by 3 points to Florida State, who was supposed to be a great team until they lost their great quarterback. I'm just making the argument for the ridiculousness of their metric in the first place, but that is the explanation. That's why I would buy it.
I don't buy it. I've watched Syracuse play. They're not good. Seriously, just because they got a camera in the locker room and their coach jumps up and down with them doesn't mean they're any good. I mean, I'm not a big believer in NC State. I said NC State would go to Notre Dame and get crushed. When they went to Notre Dame, what happened to them?
Sure enough,
I think they got crushed.
Right, but again,
NC State, I am not a believer and have not been. So that one, you can write that one off. LSU was offensively challenged. Absolutely offensively challenged. I mean, LSU does not move the ball on anybody. Who did LSU lose to early in the season? What was the non-conference loss LSU had? It was a non-conference loss. We sat back and went, whoa.
Wasn't that Troy?
Troy. Yeah, are they going to survive this week? I mean, this is not LSU when Nick Saban was the coach. It's not LSU when Les Miles was the coach.
LSU lost to Troy, yeah, by 3 points.
It was their homecoming game, I think.
Yeah. And LSU barely beat Florida. I mean, LSU's had an off year. There's no doubt. But
I mean, Syracuse is no better than a mediocre team.
But again, Iowa State, and without getting into every single minute little detail about what teams each team played, I'm looking at Iowa State's schedule, and it's almost the same type of thing. They beat a top four team, Oklahoma, by 7 points. But then, they lost to West Virginia by 4 points, and they lost to Oklahoma State by 7 points, and but they also beat another ranked team in TCU. So, yeah, Iowa State's probably a better team. Now, looking at it this way, I think I agree with you there. But, again, I don't think Syracuse should be discounted in the way it's being. I don't know. I don't like their metric. I don't like the way they rank ever. So, anyway.
Give me an M. Give me an E. Give me a D. Give me an I. Give me an O. Give me a C. Give me an R. Give me an E. What does it spell? Syracuse, mediocre. All right, so we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Zach Showers next half hour to preview Selins Grove and Bellefonte. We were hoping to get the suit on for a post-mortem.
No response from him. I tried.
I mean, it's one game, and he put himself into the witness protection program. I mean, it's just sad. I mean, Chris has been looking the entire building trying to find the suit today.
I even looked behind couches and stuff. It was crazy.
No, nah, I would have looked at movie theaters and the local Dunkin' Donuts. Better avenue of success. One quick baseball note. They're looking at what to do with pace of play in baseball. They put the new pace of play rules in 2015. 2015, they put the new pace of play rules in. So in 2014, the average length of a baseball game was 3 hours and 2 minutes. So then they put the new pace of play rules in. And it dropped down to 2 hours and 56 minutes. And then in 2016, it went to 3 hours even. And last year, it went to 3 hours and 6 minutes. So with the new pace of play rules, they're now 4 minutes longer than before they put the rules in.
Nothing like baseball to work backwards, right?
Well,
now I know there's some minor league teams that put a clock up.
Yeah, they don't have one in the New York Penn League.
I was going to ask you that because it was at a few Spikes games, and that was the first thing I did. I looked out in the outfield for a clock.
Like a play clock?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
20-second pitch clock. That's one. But here's the other one. Every sport, even hockey, has timeouts. But there's a limit. Once you use, you get one timeout in hockey. Once you use it, you're done. In college basketball, you get four timeouts. Use it or lose it in the first half, three after that. College and pro football, high school football, three timeouts each half. NBA, seven timeouts. Everybody has timeouts. Baseball doesn't. So how do you work it out? Baseball needs timeouts. And timeouts are mound visits. Right? Where the game stops all the time. Catcher has to go out and talk to the pitcher. First baseman has to go over and talk to the pitcher. Right? Pitching coach has to talk to the pitcher. I mean, that would be the equivalent of James Franklin going out and like, I got to talk to Trace McSorley here. No, I don't think so. Okay. Just take the ball and throw it. Okay. But that's part of the problem. The number of mound visits is a huge problem. And, of course, now you're getting into the point where stealing a sign, everybody's worried about stealing signs and so forth. You'd be amazed what execution means. I don't care if they know that it's coming. All right, just execute it. The Major League Baseball average in 2017 between pitches, by the way, and they're talking about a 20-second pitch clock, was 24.2 seconds. Ooh. Now, multiply that times in a ball game, maybe 250 pitches in a ball game. I mean, you knock 6 seconds off it, just 6 seconds to get it to 18. Times 250 pitches. All right. It's not bad.
Didn't have to worry about that when Roy Halladay was pitching. That's for sure.
Yeah. But mound visits are a big problem. And the reason it's a big problem is that it just stops the game. I mean, limit it to six. I mean, how many mound visits do you need in the first five innings? Limit it to six. And I mean anybody. Catcher goes out to talk. No. And just because you've mismanaged the game by not warming up somebody, you're going to go out and do the old stall tactic. That's your fault. Okay? Not the fan who paid the money. It's not their fault. It's your fault. You didn't warm somebody up.
Sunbury Motors Ford knows it's the holiday season, and you need a dependable vehicle, but also need as much money left in your pocket as possible. Let's be honest. If somebody gives you way too much for your piece of junk trade or cash just for buying a car, who do you think is paying for it?
You are!
Come see why SMC has been selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Pick from over 100 2017 Ford F-Series trucks. Priced as low as $24,997. Choose from 42 2017 four-wheel drive escapes slashed as low as $19,975. At SMC, take $3,500 off all remaining 2017 Ford Explorers and get 0% financing for up to 72 months. Don't believe everyone else's hype. Sunbury Motors always gives you huge discounts, aggressive trade values, and the best financing options. And with over four city blocks of new Fords, they have what you're looking for. Sunbury Motors Ford in the 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Merrill Reese next half hour. Tomorrow, Brad Edwards from ESPN. Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. And Pick'em Day coming up with my brother. Evidently, Sean says I've closed the gap. I closed the gap and I went 2-4. No, I'm just kidding.
I went 2-4. You went 3-3.
I went 3-3?
You did.
Okay.
Yep. 4-2, 3-3. I was stuck at 2-4, and now I'm wallowing in third place.
I'm a game back, you said?
Yeah. You're now a game back of Kevo, and I'm two back.
Wow, a little bit of pressure there. Okay, this day in sports history, then Zach Showers. 1926, the New York Rangers played their first game in the NHL. They beat the Montreal Maroons 1-0. 1957, the great Jim Brown. Now, see, we were just talking about Syracuse football. This is back when they were actually good. 1957, Jim Brown of the Cleveland Browns, Syracuse grad, maybe the best lacrosse player ever as well, set an NFL season record with 1,163 yards. He did it in only 8 games. Bill Russell of the Celtics set a new NBA record when he got 32 rebounds in the first half of the game. Now, 32 rebounds in a game, in the first half of a game. There's two ways of looking at that. 32 is an awesome number. But it's almost like setting the school record for kickoff return yardage in a game. That's a really nice feat until you realize that the other team scored 7 touchdowns and you had a lot of kickoff returns. This game featured a lot of missed shots by both teams in the first half of the game. 1969, President Nixon became the first president to attend a regular season NFL game while in office. The Cowboys beat the Redskins 41-28. 1982, it was announced that the NFL and its players had a tentative agreement to end their 57-day strike. 1994, Major League Soccer announced that it would start its inaugural season in 1996. 1997, Morton Anderson of the New Orleans Saints became only the 5th player in NFL history to reach 1,600 career points when he kicked an extra point. And in 1998, Roger Clemens, then with the Toronto Blue Jays, became the first pitcher to win 5 Cy Young Awards. With that, we bring in Zach Showers to preview Selins Grove and Bellefonte. Zach, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be back for another week and have some state playoff football this week.
No question. How long did it take you and others to console the suit?
You know what? We kind of just sat there and enjoyed taking it all in right beside him. And, you know, I think he was ready to move on to basketball. So hopefully it didn't take too long for him to move on.
Yeah, but that was the first series. I don't quit that easily. I'm sorry. All right. Last week, obviously, it was a very tough one for Shikellamia, obviously, and Selins Grove won. What did Selins Grove learn the first time that they then applied the second time when they played them?
You know, I think they looked at that game and they saw all the things that they did wrong. And they didn't necessarily look at it as Shikellamia was the better team. They looked at it more like we made the mistakes in that game and we need to fix those. They were able to, one of the biggest things with Shik, as you've heard all year, was their big plays. And a lot of their scores have been on big plays. I know preparing for the game last week, we looked and Shikellamia had actually been outgained yardage-wise on the season. So you knew that there was a lot of big plays that they made defensively, big plays they made on special teams, and a lot of their scores, you know, even came through the passing game on big plays. So on the Selins Grove defense last week really sold out to stop the run and basically said, you know what, you need to beat us through the air. And Shikellamia was not able to do that. They had 3 big plays passing-wise for, you know, 20 to 30 yards. But overall, Selins Grove was able to get off the field. Shikellamia was just 1-for-9 on third downs, and they were able to just control the clock and control the game from a balance perspective. In the first game, they tried to throw the ball a lot and had no running game, and it was really the complete opposite on Friday, where Joe Kahn ended up carrying the ball for 40 times in the win. So it was a very business-like effort for Selins Grove for in a district championship game against the rival. Selins Grove just came out and said we're the better team and then proceeded to show that for the next 48 minutes.
You faced a big play team, obviously, in Shikellamia, which made a lot of big plays, as you said, especially on special teams that made big plays this year. Did that running game allow Selins Grove to eat the clock and keep that offense off the field?
Oh, it absolutely did. I don't keep track of time of possession, but this was actually the game where I went back and kind of looked at that. And Selins Grove held the ball for almost 32 minutes of the game, only 16 for Shikellamia. So anytime you're able to control the ball, and a big factor in that game too, and we talked about it last week, was the weather. And last week it was a bitter cold night, a very strong wind going one direction. And Selins Grove, when they were going against the wind, they were able to eat up a lot of clock with the running game. And then when they had the ball with the wind, then they were able to get big plays in the passing game. They only attempted 14 passes, but it really took Shikellamy's big plays out of their offense, because for the most part, when Shikellamy had the wind, Selins Grove had the ball and was running the ball effectively.
Right. I just want to point out, if you know, Mike Ferlazzo would not have quit on the game. I mean, I'm just so you know, I just want you to know. Maybe if you ask Mike, are you thinking about basketball right now? He would have said, no, I'm locked in on this game. It's, you know, it's the kind of guy Mike is. Shikellamy had a great season, so it took a great effort to beat them. Now that they've accomplished that part of it, big hurdle. And look, there's a lot of emotion that goes into it. Now you venture into the unknown. Now, there's a good chance I might know more about Bellefonte than some other people do because they're so close. But what's the handle and the read that you have on this game and the ability now? Is it because it's a state playoff game, there's the motivator, or is there any concern of a letdown after throwing so much emotion into last week?
I don't see a letdown. As we've talked, this is a very senior-laden team. And, you know, you sometimes look at teams that, you know, they reach this level and they feel like, okay, we're good. And then you sometimes look at teams where you have a lot of guys that have played together, and a lot of it is really just, we want to keep this season going. You know, we want another week to play together as friends, as brothers. So I don't think you're going to see a letdown this week. I think this team is hungry. You know, outside of Logan Leiby and Tony Dressler, most of the senior class was there in 2015 when Selins Grove defeated Johnstown in a playoff game and made it onto the state quarterfinals. But that was a very senior-laden team, too. So most of these guys they've been there, they've seen it, but they also want to get a taste, and they want to keep this season going on as long as they can.
Weather only comes into play, I think, in this game Saturday in terms of how much wind there is, because it's field turf, obviously, at Mansion Park, so that's not going to come into play in terms of how they play it. What do they know about the setting itself? Because obviously you have to keep everything in perspective as to where you are and how to play it.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the first time that Selins Grove has played at Mansion Park. This is, I believe, their seventh time. The last time they were there was in 2012 when they played University Prep in a game that ended up, talking about weather, it ended up snowing for most of the second half of that game. So a lot of these coaches have either coached out there. Derek Pope, the offensive coordinator, played in a few games there. So while the team itself has not been there and has not been at that atmosphere, many of the coaches have been there. And I think that's one thing, you know, that will be interesting looking at Bellefonte. I mean, this is Bellefonte's first state playoff game since 1999, which actually happened at Mansion Park. But the fact that Selins Grove has state playoff experience, I think, is huge going into these games, and just from a coaching staff knowing how to mentally prepare the kids for, you know, a long trip and what that game day is going to look like, especially playing at Saturday at 1 o'clock, not something that in central Pennsylvania, there's not a lot of games that go on Saturdays at 1 o'clock, especially in the regular season.
No question. That 1999 team, then Bellefonte opened the season by beating Larry Johnson and State College. So that was actually a pretty good football team back in 1999. Zach, Selins Grove advances if?
I think they are able to shut down Bellefonte's running attack. They come out, Dylan Dietrich, their senior quarterback. He has over 1,600 yards on the ground. Bellefonte as a team is averaging close to 300 yards a game running wise. So it'll be interesting. Selins Grove comes out in a 3-5 defense that's very aggressive. It's not something that Bellefonte has seen a lot. So keys, I mean, defensively, that 3-5 against Bellefonte, they need to continue to be balanced, especially if the weather, if it gets rainy and windy, you're not going to be able to throw the ball over the place. And it's the talk every week, but at this point of the season, it really comes down to turnovers, and and making sure you're not turning the ball over. Zielinskerv didn't last week against Shikellamy, and I think if they continue to play turnover-free football and continue to do the things that they did well last week, this is a game that Zielinskerv can definitely come away with a victory and move on to the state quarterfinals.
Well, Sud hasn't been at work since Friday, so if you see him, tell him we said hi. Thanks so much, Zach, and we look forward to talking with you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Zach Showers. I'm just concerned. I mean,
you're reaching out.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's seen him anywhere.
I think I heard some sobbing from the back of the building earlier, but I didn't go check it out.
That was just the coworkers. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The music they play in the Syracuse football locker room after a loss. I'm just kidding. I wish there had been many this year. All right. But they beat Clemson. You know, the problem I'm having with the playoff committee guys is their explanations don't match up with what's going on out there.
Now, in this four-year stretch, has, like, Condoleezza Rice or Barry Alvarez, have they been, like, the voices of reason and the rest are just the rest? Or?
Well, Barry's a smart guy.
Yeah.
Look, I'll give you an example. This is a non-football example. You want to know why there's Big Ten hockey? The reason there is Big Ten hockey is Barry Alvarez. Because when Penn State went to hockey, that opened the door for, with now it's six programs, under the bylaws of the Big Ten, you're allowed to then put a Big Ten conference together if you have six conference members. Minnesota and Wisconsin were deeply entrenched in conferences for a long time in the Midwest. And Barry Alvarez stepped in and said, no. He says, look, this is the best thing for the Big Ten. This is the best thing for college hockey. Let's do this. And because of that, it opened the door to happen. Now, if you talk to the Minnesota people, to this day, they are still bitter about the fact that they broke away from their old longtime conference to be in Big Ten hockey. They're still bitter about it. Wisconsin isn't. Alvarez has done a good job over the years, to his credit, of seeing the big picture of things. And I've always liked that. I don't mind... In fact, I am a complete proponent of a committee. I am not a proponent for I am not a proponent of using strict metrics and analytics to pick who the best teams are, computers, things like that. No, it doesn't take into account anything. Too many times computers take into margin of victory, showing that you're more dominant. You have to watch the game to see why the margin is the way it is.
So it makes you wonder which committee member in the room is using the words eyeball test.
Well, it's like it's more than that. I mean, it's I don't mind using metrics and analytics and things like that and data points. One thing that Clemson does have is Clemson has played a really good schedule. Clemson's played a really good schedule. And they've really actually played a better schedule than Alabama has. Just the way it just depends on everything goes in cycles. I'm playing a Big Ten schedule this year, especially in the Big Ten East, is tougher than playing in the SEC West. It's tougher. I don't even know what the division is. Were they in the ACC Coastal? What were they in? Clemson? Who knows?
ACC. Clemson.
Yeah, but I'm saying Coastal. Which division are you in?
Oh.
Yeah, I want to know what division you're in.
Maybe it's Atlantic and Coastal or something.
Yeah, it's Atlantic and Coastal or something like that. They're one of them. Doesn't really matter. But those are the teams that you have to play year in and year out. Now, Auburn obviously is having a really good year. LSU is off. Ole Miss is really down. Mississippi State's good. Texas A&M's good. But Arkansas struggling. I mean, and that's the way it is. And then their crossover games, Tennessee. I mean, Alabama does not have in this. Now they played Florida State the first game. That to me, you know, they Florida State had its quarterback, and the whole thing was Alabama that knocked them out. And they were a dominant team. To me, that goes down as a check, good opponent, good game. Because at that moment, it was. Florida State is obviously, I mean, Florida State just, you know, the game that they had, quote, canceled, you notice they're playing it now. They're playing it on December 2nd. Did you see that announcement?
Mm.
You want to know why?
Missed that.
You want to know why? Because they need two wins to get to six to be bowl eligible. They don't play the game, they're not going to be bowl eligible. They're 4-6. They need to win the last two games. So I think I want to say it's Louisiana Monroe, Louisiana Lafayette, somebody. They're playing somebody on December 2nd with the idea that they can beat Florida and then win that game and be bowl eligible. So, hey, now, but when Alabama played them, you'd have to checkmark that as a really good win for Alabama. After that, I mean, they still haven't played Auburn yet. That'll change some of the dynamics. Still, obviously, haven't played Georgia yet. But you look at the rest of their schedule, and crossover games in conference have some meaning as well. You know, who are your crossover games? Like Penn State played at Iowa. Penn State played at Northwestern. Are they great teams? No. But are they good teams? Yes. So they play good teams on the road. Now they got Nebraska this week as a crossover game. I'm trying to think, Ohio State's crossover games. They played at Nebraska. They played
Iowa.
They played Iowa, obviously, which clobbered them.
Yep. I'm
trying to think what their other one is.
Indiana?
Well, no, Indiana's the same division.
Same division.
Shh, trying to think they played Purdue this year, maybe.